All right, so let's jump into this one. Imagine you're a suspect in a big U.S. criminal investigation,
Okay.
but you live abroad.
Hmm.
Do you have the same constitutional rights protecting you as someone who's living here in the States?
That is a great question, and that's what we're going to look at today with United States versus Verdugo Urquidez.
That's right.
This is a Supreme Court case that really kind of stretches the limits of what the Fourth Amendment's protection against unreasonable searches and seizures actually means.
Right, and the guy at the center of this case is not just an average suspect. We're talking about Rene Martin Verdugo Urquidez.
Right.
He was suspected of being, a big player in a Mexican drug cartel.
Yeah, the DEA thought that he was part of a pretty massive and complex drug trafficking operation,
Right.
one with a reputation for violence. So he was definitely someone the U.S. law enforcement wanted to get.
Yeah, so the U.S. gets an arrest warrant for him on a bunch of drug charges, and then Mexican authorities actually arrest him in Mexico and then hand him over to U.S. Marshals at the border.
So that's where things were really interesting.
Right.
A DEA agent thinks that there's evidence related to Verdugo Urquidez's alleged drug trafficking
Okay.
at his places in Mexico, so he arranges to have those locations searched.
Okay, so these weren't just like some rogue searches or anything like that, right?
Right, these weren't some kind of like off-the-books thing. They
Yeah.
were actually authorized by the Director General of the Mexican Federal Judicial Police. DEA agents even worked together with Mexican officers during the searches.
Wow, so this was like a fully cooperative thing.
Yeah, it was a joint operation. And this is a really important fact because it brings up the question of whether the U.S. Constitution, specifically the Fourth Amendment, applies to searches that happen outside of the U.S.
Right.
on foreign soil,
Yeah.
and what happens when the person involved isn't a U.S. citizen.
So essentially, like, whose rules apply, right? If
Oh,
you've
boy,
got the
yeah.
U.S. law enforcement involved,
Right.
but the search is happening in another country.
Yeah, whose constitution matters here?
Whose constitution is in play?
It all goes back to the question of extraterritoriality, the idea that a country's laws
Right.
might not actually have any power beyond its borders.
So in this case, did the district court decide that Verdugo Urquidez was protected under the Fourth Amendment?
They did.
Okay.
The district court actually sided with Verdugo Urquidez
Wow.
and decided to suppress the evidence that had been obtained
Okay.
in those searches in Mexico.
Okay.
They said that the Fourth Amendment did apply
Huh.
and that the DEA should have gotten a U.S. warrant.
So the lower court said Fourth Amendment protected him, even though he's a Mexican citizen in Mexico.
That's exactly what they said, and a panel of judges on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with that decision.
Oh, wow.
They even pointed to some earlier cases that had dealt with the constitutional rights of non-citizens
Okay.
and this idea that the Constitution could have some power outside of U.S. borders.
Okay, so this is looking like it's going to head to the Supreme Court.
Absolutely. This is a big legal showdown brewing.
Right.
The government appealed the decision of the Ninth Circuit,
Of course.
and the Supreme Court had to step in and make a decision that had some really big implications for how we think about the constitutional rights in a world that's becoming more globalized by the day.
Yeah.
What they decided was going to impact anyone who interacts with U.S. law enforcement, regardless of where they're from or their citizenship status.
So this is a big one.
So it's a big one.
Okay, so what happened? Did the Supreme Court agree with the lower courts?
Well, they didn't.
Okay.
In a 5-4 decision,
Okay.
they reversed those lower court rulings.
Wow.
They said, no, the Fourth Amendment doesn't actually protect Verdugo Urquidez in this specific case.
And why is that?
It really comes down to how they interpreted one phrase,
Okay.
the people.
The people.
Yeah, doesn't that seem pretty broad?
It does seem really broad. I would assume that applies to anybody, anywhere.
You'd think so, right?
Yeah.
But the majority of the justices said that the people, when you're talking about the Fourth Amendment,
Yeah.
actually has a very specific legal meaning
Okay.
tied to whether someone is part of a national community or not.
Okay.
So basically, they're saying if you don't have strong ties to the U.S.,
Right.
the Fourth Amendment might not protect you in the same way.
So because he was living in Mexico and was a Mexican citizen without a green card or anything like that, tying him to the U.S.
They said he wasn't part of the people that the Fourth Amendment was designed to protect.
At least in this case.
At least in this case.
Wow, that's a pretty bold statement.
It is.
So how do they justify that?
Well, they tried to kind of differentiate Verdugo Urquidez from some of those earlier cases that we were talking about that
Yeah.
had given constitutional rights to non-citizens.
Okay.
They said that those cases usually involve people who had already established a pretty strong connection to the U.S.
Okay.
or were actually physically present on U.S. soil
Right.
in those situations.
Yeah.
the court said, okay, well, yeah, there's a greater obligation to make sure things are fair and follow due process.
I imagine there were some pretty strong arguments against this whole, like, the people idea, though.
Yeah, there definitely were.
Okay.
The dissenting justices, led by Justice Brennan,
right,
wrote a really strong response,
okay,
and argued that the Fourth Amendment's protections should totally apply to Verdugo Urquidez, too.
So what was their argument?
It all came down to fairness.
Okay.
They basically said, look, if the U.S. government is going to prosecute somebody under U.S. laws,
right,
they have to give them the same constitutional protections. It doesn't matter where they're from.
Okay.
They believed in this idea of mutuality.
Mutuality.
Yeah, meaning that there has to be this two-way street,
okay,
a give and take between the government and the people it governs.
Okay.
Even if those people aren't U.S. citizens.
So Justice Brennan and Justice Marshall, they were saying that the government can't have it both ways.
And
you can't hold someone accountable to U.S. law,
right,
and then also deny them the protections that that law is supposed to guarantee.
That's right. They thought it was this big double standard,
right,
that really went against the whole point of the Constitution,
right,
and the ideas of fairness and due process, yeah, that the Constitution is built on. So they were saying, let's not focus so much on what someone's nationality is.
Okay.
Let's look at what the U.S. government is doing.
Right. So you've got the majority over here saying the people applies in this very narrow way.
Yeah.
And then you've got the dissent saying, no, it's about fairness. It's about these bigger principles.
And just when you think you've got a handle on those two positions,
yeah,
it gets even more complicated.
Of course it does.
Because there was also a concurrence by Justice Kennedy,
okay,
and a partial dissent from Justice Blackmun.
Okay, so now we've got four different opinions on this.
And they each bring something different to the table.
Okay, this is getting good.
Yeah, this is where things get really interesting.
All right, so let's dig into those other opinions.
Well, let's do it.
Okay, so we've got Justice Kennedy and Justice Blackmun kind of like adding their own perspectives to this whole thing.
Right.
What do they have to say?
Well, Justice Kennedy, in his concurrence, he was really emphasizing this idea that the Constitution has its limits, geographically speaking.
Okay.
He was really saying that this case wasn't about whether the Constitution applies to everything that happens outside of the U.S.
Okay, so he's saying that what happens in Mexico stays in Mexico.
Pretty much, at least when it comes to the U.S. Constitution.
Okay, I gotcha. And then Justice Blackmun's partial dissent, what was his take on it?
He offers kind of this middle ground.
Okay.
He agreed with Justice Brennan about this whole fairness thing.
Right.
If you're going to subject someone to U.S. law, they should have some level of constitutional protection.
Okay, so he's trying to find like a compromise.
Right. He's trying to bridge the gap between these two different viewpoints.
Okay, how does he do that?
Well, he acknowledged that it could be a logistical nightmare.
Yeah.
To apply the full force of the Fourth Amendment.
Right.
Especially the warrant requirement.
Right.
To searches that are happening in other countries.
I can imagine it would be like really complicated to get a warrant every time you want to search a place overseas.
Exactly. It just wouldn't be practical.
Right.
But Blackmun still thought that there should be some standard of reasonableness.
Okay.
Even if you don't have a full-blown warrant.
So he's like, okay, maybe a warrant isn't always necessary.
Right.
But there still needs to be some kind of checks and balances.
Exactly.
To make sure the government isn't just doing whatever it wants.
He was trying to find a way to respect the laws of other countries, but also make sure that U.S. law enforcement isn't just going rogue.
So this case, it brings up so many questions about, like, where the Constitution's power starts and stops.
It really does.
How has this case, like, actually played out in the real world?
Well, it's had a big impact on the way that investigations are done across borders.
Okay.
Especially when you're talking about the U.S. working with law enforcement in other countries.
So are you saying that after this case, it became easier for U.S. law enforcement to work with foreign authorities?
Yeah.
To do searches and seizures in other countries without having to go through all the trouble of getting a U.S. warrant?
That's one way to put it, and it does bring up some important questions,
right,
about accountability.
Yeah.
If the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply in these situations, how do we make sure that these searches and seizures involving U.S. agents are being done the right way?
Right. Like, are we just putting all our faith in other countries?
It's a tough question.
Yeah.
International agreements and cooperation are really important, but
yeah,
there can be just conflicts of law and different standards of due process from one country to another.
It seems like this case is still super relevant today, even though it was decided a while ago.
Absolutely.
Especially when you think about how globalized everything is.
And with technology blurring the lines even more.
Right.
The implications of this case go way beyond just physical searches and seizures.
What do you mean by that?
Think about the internet,
right,
data storage,
no,
all these surveillance technologies.
Right, like all the data that's out there that can be accessed from anywhere.
Does the Fourth Amendment have any power in the digital world?
That's a good question.
Especially when the data might be stored on servers in a totally different country.
Does the location of the data matter more than who owns it?
Yeah, that's one of the big questions that courts are dealing with right now.
Okay.
And what happens when you've got companies that operate in multiple countries?
Yeah.
These are all issues that no one would have been thinking about back in 1990 when this case was decided.
Right. It's like we're trying to apply these old rules to a
Right.
whole new world. But
Exactly.
even though things have changed a lot,
Right.
those core questions from Drudugo Irkrades are still at the heart of the debate
They are.
about constitutional rights in the 21st century.
Have
It makes you think about how to balance individual privacy and security with the need for effective law enforcement.
In an increasingly interconnected world.
Right. This case really shows how the legal system is constantly having to adapt
It
to keep
does.
up with technology and how crime is changing.
What seemed settled back then might be totally up for grabs now.
Yeah, Verdugo Arquidez is a good example of that.
It is a powerful reminder that the law is rarely black and white.
Yeah.
There are a lot of competing interests,
Right.
and finding the right balance isn't happy.
So what's the big takeaway for our listeners?
I think the main thing is that this case shows us the tension between protecting individual rights
Okay.
and making sure law enforcement can actually do its job
Right.
in a world where everything's so interconnected.
Right.
It's a tension that plays out every day in courts and legislatures.
So should people be worried about their rights when they're traveling abroad?
Well, it's a good reminder that the legal landscape can change when you cross borders.
Okay.
The protections you have at home might not exist in other countries.
Right.
And if you find yourself dealing with U.S. law enforcement in another country,
Right.
Verdugo Irkwedaz shows us that the Fourth Amendment might not protect you the way you think it will.
So this case is important for anyone who wants to understand how constitutional rights work in a
Absolutely.
globalized world.
It's essential knowledge.
Yeah, it really makes you think, like, how does this idea of the people fit with other parts of the Constitution
Right.
that seem to apply more broadly? Like, what about that case, Boumediene v. Bush,
Right.
that had to do with the rights of detainees at Guantanamo Bay?
Yeah.
That seemed to suggest that the Fifth Amendment's Due Process Clause does apply outside the U.S.
That's a really important point. You've hit on a key issue here. The courts haven't been totally consistent
Okay.
when it comes to figuring out how far different parts of the Constitution reach beyond U.S. borders.
Right.
Some rights are seen as so fundamental
Right.
that they apply everywhere,
Yeah.
while others might be more tied in a specific location.
So where does that leave us? What
Well,
are the lasting implications of Verdugo Irkutis?
I think the biggest takeaway is that it shows us how tricky it can be to balance individual rights
Right.
with the need for effective law enforcement.
Especially in such a connected world.
Exactly. And it's a balancing act that's happening all the time
Yeah.
in courts and legislatures as we try to make sense of globalization and all the new technologies out there.
So if someone's traveling abroad, should they just assume that they don't have any constitutional protections?
It's not quite that straightforward.
Okay.
Verdugo Irkutaz has definitely changed how investigations that cross borders are conducted, especially when the U.S. is working with law enforcement in other countries.
Yeah.
But it's not like the Constitution just disappears the second you leave the U.S.
So there's still a lot of gray area even after this big decision.
There is, this case dealt with a very specific situation,
Right.
and courts are still trying to figure out how to apply its principles to new situations,
Okay.
especially in the age of the internet and all this global data flow.
It seems like Verdugo Irkutis is more relevant than ever,
I think so.
given how globalized crime has become
Absolutely.
and how much we rely on technology and investigations.
You're right. This case is still being cited and debated today
Wow.
as courts try to apply its principles to things like online searches,
Right.
surveillance programs, and even what multinational corporations are doing.
So as technology keeps blurring the lines
Right.
between physical spaces and the digital world.
Yeah, how do we even know where a search is taking place
Right.
for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment?
What if data is accessed remotely from another country?
These are the kinds of questions that are really challenging the legal system right now. Verdugo Irkutaz gives us a starting point,
Okay.
but there are no easy answers.
Yeah, it definitely makes that whole my rights stop at the border idea a lot more complicated.
It does, and that's why this case is still being talked about and debated so much today.
Right.
It makes us think critically about where those boundaries are
Yeah.
and what it means for individuals who get caught up in law enforcement actions that cross borders.
Wow, so Verdugo Irkutis is a case that raises all sorts of questions
It
about
does.
the limits of power,
Right.
the importance of fairness,
Yeah.
and what it means to have constitutional rights in a world where everything's so interconnected.
That's exactly right. It also shows us how different legal systems can clash and how important it is to have clear international agreements
Okay.
that make sure everyone's rights are respected.
This has been a really fascinating look at this case.
It has.
I've learned a lot.
I'm glad to hear that.
If any of our listeners want to dig deeper into this, what resources resources would you recommend?
Well, there's a ton of great stuff out there.
Okay.
You've got law review articles, legal blogs, even podcasts and documentaries.
Okay.
You can find summaries and analyses of the Verdugo-Urquidez decision itself.
Okay.
And there are articles that explore how it's impacted constitutional law.
Hmm.
There are even resources that talk about how the Constitution applies in the digital age.
Okay.
This is an area of law that's constantly changing.
Right.
So there's always something new to learn.
This has been a really eye-opening deep dive.
It has been.
Into United States v. Verdugo-Urquidez.
It's a case that really makes you think.
It does. If this conversation has sparked your curiosity, we encourage you to check out some of those resources.
Yeah, keep learning, keep asking questions.
And stay tuned for our next deep dive.